MMA Roadshow episode number 57. John Morgan here. Cole Coffee is with me, and we are in Miami, Florida. I think we're it says we're in Miami, Florida. We're really just outside of that. We'll talk about that in just a second. But basically, Cole Coffee, we're here in the spiritual birthplace of the MMA Roadshow.
You're right. I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Except that was like Miami proper. That was like steps away from the beach, you know, all that good stuff. But you're right. I didn't even think about that. Wow, that's saying something.
I mean, we've had our one-year anniversary. That's come and gone. We're a little past that. But this is where it all began. Episode number one was in Miami, Florida. Again, Miami proper. We're not exactly there right now.
Yeah,
but,
and I'll go on to tell you more because, yeah, when I brought up earlier where we were at, I was like, oh, we're down in Miami. And a fighter that I met with earlier today, Dustin Poirier, he's like, no, you're not in Miami.
Oh, you told him where we were?
Yeah.
And he's like, that doesn't count.
He's like, no, that's not Miami.
Well, I'll tell you exactly where we are. It's Mikosuke Resort and Gaming. It is listed as Miami, but we'll get into that a little bit later. We're here for Titan FC 38. Full circle for the MMA Bro Show. Do you know how many countries we've been to since we started this episode or since we started this podcast?
How many we together? How many the show?
How many this show has been to and done the show from?
Ooh, I'm going to spitball off the top of my head. I should know this because I edit every single one of them. I will say 13.
All right. I don't know. I was asking you.
Oh,
I
have fucking no clue. the answer for right now is 13.
All right. Well, we've logged in some miles.
I will find out for that.
We've logged in some miles. It's been a fun year and 5 weeks so far. But it kind of just being here in Miami kind of brought it all back. Kind of remembering that first night sitting out on the patio of our Airbnb, our little rental house, and getting this podcast started, getting eaten up by mosquitoes. Had no idea what we were going to be doing.
We were like delirious, drinking beers, editing that. We were tired, getting eaten up, and it was in at just a moment of clarity. We found the greatest podcast song ever.
The best. That was pretty awesome. You found that in a heartbeat. It's crazy. It would probably seem like we put a lot of research and time into picking a song.
Like, oh, let's listen to this track. What do you think about this track? Nah, I'm not feeling
it. It was literally like the second one you picked, right?
It was like, I pretty much was like, probably the second one I think I played out loud or whatever, but I had listened to a bunch of my headphones. But, yeah, there was something about that. It just, as soon as we played it, it was just like, whoa.
MMA Roadshow Trivia, what's the name of the song? Have we ever said that before? I think we have at some point.
I'm sure we have.
You know the title.
I do. I'd have to look it up again.
You don't know it?
No, it's
you
not
added
like,
the damn thing.
Well, no, I can easily pull it up on my computer.
Okay,
I may be wrong,
but I believe it is called Epic Comeback.
Is that your answer?
That's my answer. Roadshow Trivia right here. MMA Roadshow Trivia.
Talks amongst
what
yourself.
Is the name
As you
of the
listen
song?
To this, what do you think the song title is?
Do, 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 do,
do, do, do, do. That is not right.
No?
It is close, though.
Oh, what
you
is it called?
You are 50-50. It is called Staging a Comeback.
Staging a Comeback, not Epic Comeback. Damn, I knew it was
it
something
is,
about
but
the
it's
comeback.
It's just because it's epic.
Ah, the comeback. And then we do the comeback as daily video on MMA.
See?
Man, it's just
it's small just the world. Universe.
It's the universe talking,
it was,
bro.
It was when Ken was making his comeback.
It's the universe. That's right. Yep. It did time. God.
It all came back. That's why I was like, it was like, it's meant to be.
It's karma.
It's karma. All right. Well, John Morgan, Cold Coffee. We were going to have our good man Showdown, Joe Ferraro. He was willing to come up here and do a little bit of the podcast. But truth be told, we were in production meetings all day, and it was getting late. And his wife is here with him, and they were going to go have dinner. And he's like, no, I'll come up and do some of the podcast first. I was like, bro, go have dinner with your wife, man. It's cool. We'll make it work. So Showdown, Joe Ferraro. A longtime contributor, MMA Junkie, is here as well in Miami, Florida. But he had to step out. So we'll have him on the podcast another time. Okay, so we're at the Mikosuke Resort and Gaming. I was going to say, how do the locals say it? Because the thing is, fortunately, we have a linguistic expert, Cole Coffee, who's always able to, you know, really get the true scoop on how things are done. And I wanted to speak to a local. But they're kind of busy right now, and but I know that you, being the linguistic master that you are, have studied with it, and you just simply by conversating with these folks, you have mastered their language, their technique, all the regional dialect. How exactly is it, Cold Coffee, that the locals say it?
Well, if you remember when we first checked in, the woman at the front was very adamant that it was Mikosuke. Mikosuki. But I'm not sure if that's correct because the inner tribesman of myself feels like it should be a stronger, like, Mikosuki. Mikosuki. Obviously, if you're listening, you're not seeing the hand gestures that you must say.
Oh, you must do. They're forward-thrusting hands.
Yes, it's like I'm like Indian man. I don't know. I assume it's an Indian word.
Do you know how Conor McGregor pronounces it? All right, Mikosuki Resort Gaming. We're here for Titan FC 38. As we said, we're on the outskirts of Miami, and when I say the outskirts, we're looking out. We're looking out our room right now. We're actually in my room here on the executive level.
Yeah, I can see the Everglades off in the distance.
It's the Everglades. I mean, it's literally like the road ends, and there's just the Everglades. I mean, there is nothing as far as the eye can see. I mean, we are literally on the edge of civilization here.
Yeah, it's pretty dark out the window. You don't see anything. You see just that trail of traffic that just goes down that one little measly construction road right now. It's interesting. I guess it's kind of peaceful or whatever.
I was listening to MMA Junkie Radio this morning. Apparently, in a small world situation, George and Goz came here on a family vacation in 1991, and they saw a dude wrestle an alligator. That should tell you a little bit about where we are right now.
You know what? More than one person told me to watch out for alligators out here.
Oh,
I told
Jesus.
Me, I'm like, we're not.
Like, they're not coming up on the executive level. That's good.
I don't know if they get past the giant road construction and the berms and the whatever out here. I mean, I don't know. I barely saw any water where we're at. I mean, it's like, I know it's out there somewhere.
Yeah, it's in the Everglades, right?
Somewhere.
Well, we're here for Titan FC 38. We're actually here for two different reasons. It's weird. We're on one business trip together. We'll get into that in just a second. I am actually here because I'm doing the play-by-play call on UFC Fight Pass for Titan FC 38 on Saturday night. It's a one-time gig for now, but hopefully if I do a decent enough job, they'll retain my services in the future. So I hope everybody that listens to the road show will tune in on Saturday night on UFC Fight Pass. Hear my call. Kamaru Usman is going to be in there with me. And Showdown Joe Ferraro is going to be our third man roaming around getting interviews. So hopefully you'll tune in to watch it. And if you dig it, maybe you can tweet at them all and tell them you you enjoyed it and you want to see me do it more. Because I love doing play-by-play commentary. I don't get to do it a whole lot just because the schedule's so damn busy with UFC responsibilities. But this was fantastic. It was in an off week, and I could make it happen. So that was great. Cole Coffey was coming to Florida anyway just to do some visits and just kind of do some gym visits and tour around and take a look at the new American Top Team facility, catch up with the Black Zillions, just get some tape on a couple different things. So we figured, hey, what the hell, man? Why don't we combine those trips into one and let's do it together? So that's why we're here. We checked into the hotel the other day, and Cole Coffey, I want to say, there was a moment of hesitation because we checked in together and we were on kind of the same reservation, basically, because just so people know how it works, I have a corporate card and I pay for everything. And it's just basically everything that Cole Coffey needs, I put it on my card and then I turn in the paperwork at the end of the trip and we get it paid for. But one of our rooms got upgraded. Not just one of them. And that was because they were full. And so they were like, hey, we're going to upgrade this one room to the executive level. Now, they really didn't make it clear whose room they upgraded or if one belonged to one of us and one belonged to the other. And so for a brief moment, I was like, dude, I should just be like, I should give it to Cole Coffey, man. I should just give him the executive level. And
I call bullshit on that.
It crossed my mind. It crossed my mind. And then I was like, why? Why would I do that? Let's just grab it, Morgan. So I just want to throw that out there. If I was the a-hole for doing that.
I wasn't even expecting. I mean, it'd be one thing. I mean, like, even though she did give the cards to your room first.
She did hand the one card to me, and then she put the other card middle of both of us.
They were both the same card. It was 403. Well, I don't want to say my room or whatever.
403. He's
God
in room 403.
Damn it, motherfucker. Well, that's right. By the time you hear this and actually listen to it, I'll be long gone. But no, I mean, I wouldn't expect. I mean, I didn't even think about it. I mean, it's your event. You know, we're here because you could do the whatever. I'm just chilling
True.
Along. You know, getting a chance.
I am talent, as they say.
You know, you have to sleep and look all pretty on camera and whatnot. Which was today was fun. We got to go watch Morgan pick out a new suit.
Oh, so dude, I only have one suit. So here's what: I only have one suit. Okay, that's it. I own one suit, And at 38 years old, the one suit I own, my mom bought for me. Just going to throw that out there. Just because she was being nice. She didn't have to. The only time I wear it is to the World MMA Awards. That's it. I wear it to the World MMA Awards. In fact, at this year's World MMA Awards, I put my jacket on, reached in the pocket, and found my tickets from the previous year. Because I didn't even take it to the dry cleaners. I just wore it. And I just set it in the closet, and then I pulled it back out.
I mean, because really, how dirty is it going to get?
It's not that bad.
After one time, you know?
So I have one suit, and I got this job last second, and so I was like, oh, crap, I got to take my suit to the dry cleaners. Took my suit to the dry cleaners, and those a-holes lost it. And so I had to fly here with no suit, and so I had to go buy another suit. So part of my trip was to go buy another suit. Kind of whack.
So they find it eventually?
I don't know. My wife has to go follow up with them or whatever.
That's just crazy.
And...
but that was interesting. That was interesting. I hadn't been to a men's warehouse in a long time, so that was a learning experience.
They saw me coming, dude. They're like, "This dude needs a suit."
They're like, "She was like, I'm picking out.
I got this for you, this for you, this for you."
Well, she didn't hesitate to ask whether I needed one too. I think she was going for some commission there at that point.
She did good though. We got so my suit that you'll see me on when you tune in on the UFC Fight Pass Titan SC 38 is brand new. It's actually being tailored right now. I have to go pick it up tomorrow afternoon. So I did want to talk too. One other quick thing before we get to the MMA talk. About our trip over here, because hopefully people care about what we're doing. It's the goddamn road show.
It's
hopefully they care about
what's
on the road. You got the fake upgrade on American Airlines.
Oh, that was
on the flight here. I think this is hilarious.
She
I was asleep, so it didn't. I was already in first class.
Baller.
But I am. I will say domestically, I fly first class almost every time. Now we don't buy first class. The MMA junkie budget does not include first class. But luckily, I just fly so damn much. They end up giving it to me anyway. So I was already chilling in first class, and you got a brief tour of first class before
yes.
being ushered back to your coach
seat. Before being ushered back in with the serfs and the lowlifes in the back. You know, I was on the upgrade list. I was like, I think at one point I was 3 of 3, but I don't think there was really any seats available. I had tried putting in, you know, those mile upgrades, those put in requests. You know, you say, all right, use whatever, however many. In American, it's like 500-mile segments or whatever that you have to divvy up to try to get the first class. And so I told him, yeah, take the five, whatever. I'd rather fly first class if it's going across the states. You know, it's not a small hop. Let's do it. You know, and plus I never get a chance to use them, so I have like some
right.
built up.
You don't want to use it to like fly to Los Angeles or something.
Yeah, right. So didn't think I got it. Was no big deal. So I'm sitting down, starting to have a chat, and it was great. I was having another chat with a it was a Brazilian girl. It was interesting. It was in Miami.
Brazilian girl.
Yeah. But it was like there was like
was that your Brazilian girl?
No, I don't know what that was. There was a ton of Portuguese speakers, and so she sat down, and I just so happened to be wearing like this UFC Brazil shirt on, and we ended up starting to strike a conversation because she said when she passed me in the seat, she's like, "Scusi." And I was like, oh, I was like, was that Portuguese? And she's like, oh, yes, Brazil, blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay. You know, being the worldly travels that we did, you know, I recognize Scusi as being not English. And we proceeded to have a conversation.
I believe you mean excuse me.
You're saying it wrong, lady. So I pulled out the Google Translate. We're chatting, whatever. And while that conversation starting, the woman that, you know, usually just double checks on seats or whatever comes through. And she's like, Mr. Hathaway? And I was like, yes. She's like, oh, you're now in 6B or whatever. I'm like, fuck yeah, upgraded. So I said my old, have a good flight.
Peace
ciao.
Out, bitches. F you, common folks. I'm moving up to first class.
Grab my bag, walk up to first class, start putting my shit in the bin. And like before I even got a chance to sit down in the chair, she comes back. She's like, I'm sorry. He showed up. You got to go back to your seat. And I'm just like, well, that was fun. Thanks for trying. So it was an exercising, you know, moving my bag from space to space. And
you got your upgrade request in on the way back?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see.
So
what
it hasn't been approved or anything. So
hopefully not the fake upgrade.
Yeah. No, that was interesting. I, you know, it was so close. I got to see how the other half lived for just a brief moment.
And then
moment.
We snapped the curtain right in
then,
front of you. We're like, get back there, common
back,
man.
And then, yeah, they snapped that curtain so you can't go up there and use the bathroom. Oh, well.
Semi-translucent.
Yeah. And then I proceeded to have another awkward conversation thanks to Google Translate. But it was good. I love Google Translate, man. It's a nice
dude. It's hilarious. It kinda works. Cold Coffee is the man on the road, dude. He just uses his Google Translate app on his phone, and just sits there and like does Google Translate. In Korea, you were doing like visual because you can't say those things. They're all like symbols and
stuff.
Yeah,
it's like whatever.
It was amazing.
And just hope that it worked. You know, and it's funny, you know, because you got the gist that both of them were like not quite right, but it was enough that you were getting the gist of what we're saying. But we literally talked hour or two or
That's
something
crazy.
Like that while we're just pounding beers, whatever, with the guy that was running the place or whatever. So yeah, it's great. If you have never tried it, download the app, man. Check it out. Find an
dude,
awkward
there's nothing
situation.
Cooler. There,
and
I will
just
say,
man. Chat,
man. I end
it's
up laughing
cool.
at you. I end up laughing at you, and I'm like, "What the hell is he doing right now?" Next thing I know, you're getting like a tour of the kitchen or something. But it's like amazing to be in a country where you can't speak a single word. Like, I mean, you two people have never met each other, not the same experiences, not the same knowledge, mm-hmm. not the same language, and then due to this technology, you're literally having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's a little bit, it's pretty cool. So I give Cold Coffee much respect for that, man. he does not give an F about jumping in a situation like that. He will talk to a Korean dude with a phone and Google Translate.
That's what we do. That's what's
up.
Show.
All right. Well, we are here for two different reasons. It's kind of a combined trip. I'm here for Titan FC 38. Cold Coffee is here on a gym visit. Today was the first day of filming. He was actually at American Top Team. And, out there taking a tour of that massive new facility they've built out there. It's just down the road from their original facility, so they're still in Coconut Creek, Florida. You got a chance to go through, and Richie Guerrero was able to walk you through the entire facility and kind of show you what they got going there. I was just kind of looking at some of the footage that you shot. We'll actually have kind of a gym tour type piece up on MMA Junkie so people can see it. We'll have that, you know, up in the next week or so. But, man, this thing – I know that they're so proud of it, man. That, you know, they built this thing from the ground up. This was not like a building that they bought and retrofitted, you know, to what they wanted to make. Like, I mean, they literally designed this thing and built it from the ground up to their specifications. And it looks incredible on film. Give me an idea what the facility is like in person.
It is enormous. It is so impressive. And it's funny you say that, you know, and they built it up. When I talked to Richie, it literally was about a two-year plus process to do the designs, get the approvals necessary to do everything. It's kind of in its own little section, you know, off of the highway. I can't remember what the highway is. I'm not from around this area, obviously, but it's beautiful. I mean, but you walk in, I mean, the outside looks kind of like how it did the last one.
Kind of
palm
like gray
trees.
Slab and
yeah, you know, but very clean, you know, and it's got the American Top Team. It's got the small little American Top Team logo. But you walk in and immediately, you know, you're greeted by the front desk, you know, and above that is the American Top Team logo off to the left-hand side. You'll see like their little pro shop with shirts and whatnot. And then boom, right there is the rack that's just full of all the belts. Their belt, I think there were 7 belts in there from various UFC, WEC, Bellator belts, the
pretty cool.
Risen or Ryzen, whichever, right, belt that King Mo just got recently. So amazing that they've got the trophy rack right there that you're seeing all that.
That's cool.
And then it opens up into that huge room where it's ungodly. It's so big. And I'm very excited to show some of the footage. I think it came out pretty good. You know, it was kind of a run and gun handheld. You know, you kind of do what you kind of do and just run with it and hope for the best. But it was amazing. It's neat. It's always great when gyms like that take the time to let us kind of come in there and get to see these practices, see them up close. You know, but it's a fine relationship because they want to be forthcoming. They want to show around. They want to do whatever, but they also want to protect the best interests of their fighters.
Well, and that kind of happened today. You know, one thing I do want to say about the facility, the dorms are awesome, man. They got they got these dorms that people can stay there. But you said, you know, they invited us in. They kind of opened the doors up. But it was sparring day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Conan Silvera was like, hey, you guys come on. I know you guys are going to be in town. We talked to him. Richie Guerrero said, come on in. And you came in, and you had to get some interviews and things to get done. And you started to film. And I believe a gentleman you may or may not have heard of, I believe it's Robert maybe Robbie Lawler, I think is the way you say his last name.
You might have heard of him.
Had a kind suggestion for you that maybe you shouldn't be filming the sparring.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, and it's happened all around. You know, like guys want to protect their athletes. They want to protect whether a guy is looking sharp or not sharp in his sparring. You know, they want to protect their escapes on the ground when they're grappling. They want to protect
the
different little moves.
They're working on.
Yeah, all that little stuff, and that's totally understandable. You know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, 2 weeks out from a fight, you get this insane look at this move that a guy has been perfecting
right.
for the whole fight camp. You know, that's not what we're trying to do.
He's never thrown an uppercut. Look how often he's throwing in the uppercut.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So, yeah, I got down there on the ground, and I was shooting some of the opening warm-up segments of when King Mo was starting to do a little sparring. Granted, this was just the warm-up sparring. So, you know, it was like the first of what eventually would have been like five rounds. So they weren't really even getting into it. But, yeah, I felt the little tap on the shoulder. And he's like, you really shouldn't be filming the warm-up or something along those
right.
lines. I was like, no. Conan said I could get the warm-ups or whatever. Like, don't be mad, Mr. Lawler.
Don't hit me.
I don't want to argue about it. We're cool. Like, you will win. But it's kind of cool. It was funny, you know, because totally understand. And that's one of the things. And I think that's why we're able and lucky enough to do what we get to do. And I think that stems from my time and my history with the UFC mm-hmm. was able to kind of see whatever I could do and go wherever, but also in the same sense, you never want to abuse that trust that if a fight team or whatnot, yeah, there's a whatnot for you.
And what have you.
Allows you to come into their home, because that's, in a sense, what it is for these guys. They're trusting you to do the best, show what you need to do, but also take into account this is their livelihood.
Well,
don't mess with that.
I think it's
trust.
Such a great point, man. I mean, we're journalists, you know what I mean? But yeah. When people invite us in the gym, we've talked about it before, but, you know, just to make it clear, it's, you know, if I walk in and somebody invites me to come to the gym and I see some dude shooting up steroids in the corner, you know, they're like, hey, why is everybody, like, shooting each other in the ass with, you know, needles over there?
What is that needle injected
in
your ass?
That's something we'll probably need to talk about. But if you see, like, that dude never goes southpaw, like, why is he going southpaw right now? Or, you know, like, that dude never shoots power doubles. Why is he shooting so many power doubles? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That stuff that, yes, we're journalists, but you got to realize – man, they're inviting you in, and that's something you just leave it alone. And I think that's – I don't feel bad about that. I think that's the protocol, to be honest,
yeah.
And I think it's fair.
And I think what I've seen before where I know for sure that I haven't used is I've been at gyms before shooting these things, and, you know, a random fighter or another fighter takes a spill, maybe twists an ankle, does something.
Right.
You know, it's like a quasi-injury. That's the last thing I want to show on them, because, one, you get people starting to say, oh, I told you that gym – didn't train right, or this gym, blah, blah, blah. And the last thing I want to do is add fuel to some bullshit debate, you know, something like that, you know, because there was footage once where we were at Duke Rufus's gym, and at the time it was after Anthony got hurt, or somebody got hurt, and they were trying to say, oh, people get hurt too often at Rufus's gym. But this was like a random guy that wasn't really a good wrestler overextending himself with a guy that was a better wrestler and kind of hurt his knee a little bit.
Right.
Was it what was going on in the gym? Was it the gym's fault? No. But the last thing I want to do, since it was like topical at the time,
right,
because people were talking about it, that's the last thing I want to
show.
And show I never 10
seconds
showed
it. Of footage out of an hour-long practice,
yeah,
or whatever, and you're going to be like, see?
Like,
I told you.
See what happens. Which we could have did, and it would have got clicks and it would have did whatever. But would it have ruined a relationship that's been years in the building that for – nothing?
Yeah.
It's not worth it, you know?
Definitely
so that's
not.
The kind of thing that also that you know, and that's not being a bad jurist. I think that's just you're playing the long game and you're doing what's right. There's no sense in, you know, trying to find these short little things to get clicks or
blow
do whatever.
Blow on the internet on one day.
Blow on the internet on one day, and even on that, it's, you know.
Yeah.
So there is
a
level
of
trust
that goes. When people
in,
are fighting at your house, man, there's a little bit of balance. Now, that said, you did get to watch sparring, and we've talked about what you saw. We can't share. But I will say this, and this is the kind of hard-hitting news that we break only on the MMA Roadshow. Bigfoot Silva sporting hair.
Yeah. And
a big beard.
He
looked like a totally different dude.
He
I hope he keeps
totally
it.
Totally different. I liked it. I was just like, what the hell? I mean, it was good. I mean, and don't take this the wrong way, it, like, humanized Bigfoot. Bigfoot is a big, scary dude. This may be like, let's fucking hang out and have some beers and watch, like, some whatever. I felt like I'm not so scared of him anymore.
That's awesome.
But, no, I liked it. He had the longer hair. I mean, he looked like a... You know, maybe he had been hitting the clubs or something, and the ladies were like, dude, why don't you grow your hair out a little bit? And I liken a man that's got a beard, and he's like, fuck it, I'm doing it, and I'm Bigfoot.
You're just saying that because you're sporting a beard. You're trying to make the beard work for everybody.
Yeah, right?
My wife
Except
tells
his
me
beard,
to
his
grow
beard,
the beard
is much fuller than mine. I don't have the – that's why I fit in right here because I was probably an inappropriate joke, but I should probably stop. No, but I had a buddy. Fuck it. I've started. Might as well finish it. But I had a buddy. He used to always tease me. He's like, oh, you're growing one of those Indian beards. I'm like, what the fuck you mean? He's like, you got a patchy here, a patchy here, a patchy here, a patchy here. You know, so my shit doesn't grow in thick, doesn't grow in full.
We apologize to all Native Americans listening to the show.
I apologize. I'm going to get the Mikasuki on me tonight.
Oh, gosh. All right, so Bigfoot sporting hair and a beard. We'll dig you out of that. King Mo, you got a chance to speak to King Mo. King Mo was going hard in some of the footage that I got to see. He was going hard, and he spoke to you a little bit. He seemed kind of fired up today.
Yeah, it was good. But, you know, the thing about King Mo, I mean, he's like one of these guys. If he's in a great mood and he wants to chat, mm-hmm. he has some of the best one-liners out there. When he's excited for a fight, but he's also a guy, like, you got to catch him in the right mood, because if he's, like, if you're asking him bullshit, which I probably did ask him some bullshit, you know, in stumbling through the interviews, because Cold Coffee is not such a polished interviewer as one Mr. Morgan, but, you know, if you are not right there or whatever, like, I've seen him just tear into people and just be like, I'm done, like, with this interview or whatever, but no, he seemed in great sorts. I think he looked good in sparring. He looked like he's ready for this fight. So I think that in turn, he was just in a good mood, you know. But he had a great workout, and he was very forthcoming. And
it's funny that you mentioned your interviewing skills, because what I thought is that as the latest installment of Cold Coffee's Casual Conversations, we should include your conversation today with King Mo, since you were at ATT. You'll be at Black Zillions tomorrow doing a little gym visit around here. I figured, hey, I wasn't doing any interviews today. I was sitting in production meetings all damn day. All damn day. I mean, so many meetings, I can't even begin to explain to you. This is like the most work I've ever done in my life for this Titan FC show. I'm excited about it, but it's the most I've ever done in my life. So I think as we re-up on these cold, frosty beverages here on the executive level of the Mikosuki Resort and Gaming Facility,
Mikosuki,
we should listen to Cold Coffee's Casual Conversations.
First, Mo, just give us an update. You know, what, I know you've been training, you know, you're preparing for this upcoming fight. Just kind of give us an update since people have last seen you. How you been doing?
Man, I've been doing good, man. Since the last time y'all saw me, you know, I think y'all seen me in Japan. And then I was, like, doing media stuff, but I'm back in Florida, man, training hard, training smart, getting the work in, you know what I'm saying, and just chilling, training and chilling. That's about it.
Has it been frustrating? I know this fight was supposed to happen before, didn't really get a chance. Has it been frustrating waiting for this? I know you've been keeping busy, and I'll ask you about the Rizin. I mean, has there been any sort of frustration waiting for this thing to happen?
Ain't no frustration, because time be flying. Time flies fast, so, you know, the tournament just ended. The tournament was what? When the last tournament was, like, November or something like that, September. And look where we're at now. Time flies, man. 2 weeks, we fighting.
Let's talk a little bit about Japan. Tell me about that experience going over there. I mean, was it just to kind of stay busy, stay loose? I mean, what was the whole thought? And plus, it was in a different weight class. You were fighting heavyweight, if I'm correct. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the process of what the decision was to go to Rizin and do that. And then what did you take away from it, besides a nice piece of change and the Rizin belt?
Truth be told, the objective of Rizin is to go win a tournament and get paid and get fights, because, like, you know, when I fight, I get paid. So it wasn't no, like, you know, mathematical, you know, equation or nothing like that to do it. We just did it, you know, saw the opportunity, took it, ran with it, and went out there and fought 3 times in 2 nights.
Well, tell me a little bit about, we'll jump over into this fight. Tell me a little bit about preparation for Bellator 154. How excited are you for it, and how excited are you to get in there with Phil Davis?
I'm true. I'm real. I'm not. I don't get excited till weigh-ins. So right now, it's just business, you know what I'm saying? It's work time, train. I like to train. I like to come to the gym. I'm excited to spar. I'm excited to do strength training. I'm excited to do all that. But I just think about the fight when I have to do specifics. Now, I'll be more excited when weigh-ins happen because you never know what can happen. I could be training hard, be excited, and all of a sudden Phil gets hurt. You know what I'm saying? So I get excited once the weigh-in happens.
Because then at that point, you know, there's no getting away from it.
Yeah, it's action.
You had mentioned something. There was a quote that I read in one of the past articles that you said, I'm not worried about taste. I'm worried about performance. Can you explain that, what that means to somebody that maybe doesn't understand that?
Well, you know, with me, like, you know, I'm worried about performance. I'm going to go out there and get the victory, get the job done. If I can be exciting here and there, you know, be exciting. But some people worry about, like, just, you know, they're like MMA snobs in a certain extent. You know what I'm saying? They're worried about, you know, like, sportsmanship. I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about performance, you know what I'm saying, and getting the job done. That's all. I don't care about, like, if I look exciting. But my goal is to go out there and perform and get the job done. If I do that, it'll be exciting. But I'm not worried about being exciting. I'm worried about just getting the job done and doing what my trainer told me to do.
What does first, Phil had said pretty much he thinks he's better everywhere except in wrestling when it comes to you. What do you think about that when he says that? Trying to get on the skin a little bit? Do you think he really believes that?
I don't know. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody says something until it's fight time.
That's true.
Like, we did an interview, he said that he's better than me stand-up, better than me jiu-jitsu, better than me wrestling. Okay, he could think that. I don't care, because we're going to find out May 14th.
And I know you've never been one to really throw out predictions or whatnot, but in your head, how do you see the fight playing out between Phil?
Me getting my hand raised? I don't know what's going to happen. He can come out there and all of a sudden have, like, some Deontay Wilder power and some Eddie Chamber speed, you know what I'm saying? And he can have some Bukow when Tyrone Spahn kicks, you know what I'm saying? Who knows? Like, who knows what he's improved on? He could have some Fabricio Verdum and Jacare and, you know, Hamo Bahal grappling. Who knows? You know, and beat Samil by my boy Dean Lister. Who knows? We're going to find out May 14th because I don't know what he's working on. He don't know what I'm working on, but we'll find out May 14th.
And Liam's been out. I think he had the medical suspension. It was like 6 months. That should be done by now. Do you see the winner of this, the definitive winner of this, get that next title shot?
We'll see. I'm 205 heavyweight. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't mind fighting Minnikov. You know, I fought heavyweight before. I'm undefeated heavyweight. Like, give me a loss at heavyweight. I don't care. Give me beat. Put me in heavyweight. Let someone beat me. I'm cool with that.
So at this point, I mean, it doesn't matter light, heavy, or heavy. You'll take a fight as long as the fight's exciting and maybe the money's right?
As long as the money's right, because the fight is up to the two fighters to make it exciting. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can fight Plato. You know what I'm saying? And if Plato's willing to sign the contract, I'll fight Plato and kick his ass. You know what I'm saying? But our goal is to go out there and fight. So if we both fight hard and both fight smart, it could be exciting. Who knows?
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Muhammad King Mo Lawal in the latest edition of Cold Coffee's Casual Conversations. Look, our man's all grown up. He's just doing interviews by himself. I love it.
Not necessarily the best interviews.
Ah, whatever. Who cares? So, just to address some facts here, during the break, you actually totaled things up here. You said we've done broadcasts in 13 different countries so far. Not bad guess. 12.
12.
Not bad. Not bad for 57 shows in. U.S., Brazil, Philippines, Australia, Croatia, England, South Korea, Ireland, Japan, Scotland, Mexico, and Poland. The MMA Roadshow is on the road, son.
On the road.
That's how we do. That's how we do. All right, UFC 197 was last week. That's how we wrapped up our week. Of course, we had a post-fight show, as we do, a little half episode, bonus edition. This week, the Conor McGregor show. My God, the news has been all Conor McGregor. Don't have to rehash everything. If you're listening to this podcast, I know you've been following along. Conor McGregor. No doubt about it. Biggest star in the sport right now. Now, listen, Ronda Rousey, when she comes back, if she picks up a win in the fall, I mean, you could make the case. And it's two different things. I think it was Shamat Kharsandu, actually, MMA Junkie European contributor, who explained it a really good way one time that I thought. It's like, listen, the biggest star – hell, it might have even been you. I don't even know. Maybe I'm just trying to give your good opinions away to somebody else. The biggest star inside the sport, like if you're a fight fan, is Conor McGregor. The biggest star overall is still probably Ronda Rousey. Like, mainstream world acceptance, there's probably more people that know Ronda Rousey than Conor McGregor. And that may still be the case, but I think it's closing very quickly. I mean, Conor McGregor, dude, like, that. Did you see that stat with that retweet when he said that he retired? They said it was the most retweeted tweet by an athlete all year. That's insane, including beating Kobe Bryant's retirement tweet.
That is crazy.
It's insane, especially when you know the tweet was bullshit the minute you read it.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy about it. So don't have to rehash the whole situation, but I will say this. It's funny. It was Sunday night. I was Monday night when he did it. I think it was Sunday night. I was at home with my wife, sitting on the couch at like 11 p.m. when he tweets this retirement tweet, that he's back on the card or whatever. Fuck, I don't even remember which one it was. I just remember that. This guy he's been driving the business all week. Everything has all been about Conor McGregor. It should be about, you know, other things, and, you know, obviously UFC 200 has been going and all this, but it's all been about Conor McGregor. Cole Coffey, what do you think, man? I want to get your opinion, and I want to offer mine. Do you support one side or the other? Because I think this has been very much drawn as a battle between the UFC and Conor McGregor, you know, Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta against Conor McGregor, and both people have made some choices and both people have made some decisions on both sides. Are you feeling anybody right now as clear-cut right or wrong?
No. I believe there's definitely right on both sides, but I think they both had the points to do what they did. But I if anything else, I guess what kind of – now I guess where I'm left at is where my whole thing was, you know, with Conor agreed to fight, do the fight, you know, so I agreed that there were certain promotional things that he needed to do.
Right.
Didn't meet that, whatever, and then he tried to bend a little bit. UFC, you know, was still pretty strict or whatever, you know, and I like the fact that when Conor was like, well, I could still do this, maybe give a little bit. I thought at that point was enough that the UFC should have brought him back in.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, that doesn't really say if there wasn't something else being added on to that point. I thought if there was a matter if Conor wanted more money at the same time and that wasn't being met, that's why the UFC didn't want to bend. I think if it was just a matter of taking one press conference off of the schedule, one less trip to Stockton, one less promo commercial shoot, I thought it could still happen.
Yep.
You know, for the fact that it didn't happen made me think that there's something else going on behind the scenes that neither party wanted to admit or to say. So good on the UFC if that is the case for not actually saying it and just saying that they stuck to the principles or whatever. And Conor didn't come out and say, well, all right, well, actually what it was I wanted 10 more million. But the thing that kind of just threw me off towards the end of the thing was his whole tweet about, I'm back on UFC 200.
And that's what was
that
Sunday night at 11.
Me yeah, a little wrong.
That's what was Sunday night at 11 p.m. And I was replaying it in my head. I'm like, was that Sunday night? Because, I mean, that was right after. Dude, UFC 197, that was a long day because I had to do this trip and all this. But that was it. It was 11 p.m. on Sunday night, which obviously was Monday morning in Ireland. And that's when he tweeted, I'm back on the card. Me and Danny and Lorenzo worked it out. We're good. And it was so bizarre because right away, you know, I was sitting on the couch with my wife, watching TV, and I was like, honey, I'm sorry. I got to go back to work. And she was like, whatever, asshole, go do it. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. And immediately I started, you know, reaching out to some UFC staff people that I know, that I have some contacts with, and their first reaction was that they thought that I got had by a dummy account. They were like, are you sure that's right? Like, are you sure that came from Conor's account? And I'm like, yeah, it's – and I was like, oh, maybe it wasn't. Let me double check. I'm like, oh, no, it was definitely Conor's account, which kind of goes to show me, which is why immediately I was like – I tweeted right away. I mean, moments after he tweeted that, because, again, I was on the phone with people. I tweeted – tap the brakes on that Conor McGregor announcement, and then, you know, I came back. But it's so funny because I've been going back and forth the whole way. Originally, you know, him saying I'm retired, I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird, but I guess, you know, he's just here. That, you know, UFC pulls him out, and I'm like, yeah, I don't blame him, dude. UFC's got to pull him out. Then he came out with a statement on Facebook, and I'm like, good statement, man. That's a good statement. You know what? Honestly, he was very honest. He was open.
Yeah,
let's put him back on the card, man. Put him back on the card. And then they didn't, and I was like, man, UFC – you guys dropped the ball on this one. And then he comes out with that tweet, and I'm like, the hell is that? Now you're just straight lying to people that you're back on the card, like you're playing with people's emotions. Now I'm back in the favor of the UFC going, dude, what are you doing? Like, why would you say that? And then it was really fun because the press conference that they had this week in New York, I believe, you know, he tweeted right at the beginning of that. He retweeted a meme or internet – is that how you say it? Meme?
Meme.
Retweeted an internet meme.
A meme?
Of a meme? A mammy? A meme? They retweeted that of – it was like him – it was a gif of him laughing or whatever. And the text was, UFC 200 will still be just as financially successful without Conor McGregor. And it was just like him laughing. It's like, LOL. And I was like, well, that's kind of an unnecessary shot at your bosses. Like, it's interesting times, man. It's interesting times. I still do think everything's going to be fine. I mean, you know, every conversation I've ever had with Dana White, like, yes, I mean, this is annoying, but dude, if he can make money with you, he's gonna work with you, and they can make money together.
And that's the thing; they definitely can make money together. I'm sure Conor can make money elsewhere. If he goes elsewhere, he's not gonna make the money from, because he's not gonna get the size of an audience that he's gonna get if he stays on the UFC platform. If he tried to go elsewhere, nobody else is gonna be able to pay him the money.
And he can't, by the way. Number one, he can't,
and he's contractually obligated. So I don't think they're going to try to do it. I mean, the UFC's not going to shoot themselves in the foot. I think, if anything else, they had to draw a hard line and either stick it to what it was. I don't know if he was just trying to push it, which, hey, as a person that controls that much pull, I mean, the amount of people that come out in support of this guy, and almost just, I don't want to call it blind faith, but just this fandom, this support that he gets. I mean, like, these people, I don't even know if they're really fans of the UFC or really the fans of MMA. They're just fans of Conor. Mm-hmm. I think they like the sport, but they like him more than anything else. They like him more than anything. I mean, like, he can do no wrong. And you're right. You hit on the head about playing with people's emotions. I thought his text did them no favors, because if it's not the truth, because I read when I went to his tweet and saw some of the comments, people were generally very excited to see him back on the card, and we're very,
good,
very
man.
Happy.
I'm going. I'm buying tickets.
And
I'm doing.
He's lying to him. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, he's not buddy buddies with all these people. It's not his deal. It's not his place to have to make them happy and do whatever. And I guess he could say or play whatever. But when you are a guy that's trying to be the people's champ and acting like this guy, like, I'm all about the people and whatever, and then you go and you're just playing with all your fans' emotions like that. It's one thing to make a play and sort of, like, do all those things, but it's just wrong. I mean, but whatever.
I'll tell you what, man. I guess
will forget it after. You know,
we're
going to
move
on. Once
he
gets his next fight, it's all going to be done.
As far as
I'm
concerned, UFC 200 is full. We're going to get him on 201, 202, something like that. It's all going to move on. But I guess since we're kind of putting a bow on the situation, because, I mean, I guess we'll have to talk about it again. I mean, once he gets booked again, we'll certainly have to ask him, what's your relationship like with the UFC? Are you frustrated? Are you okay? I mean, we'll have to ask all that. But I think right now I'm honestly leaning in the favor of UFC over Conor right now, just because, again, I thought UFC was in the right. Then I thought UFC was in the wrong, and now I feel like Conor screwed up, and I feel like if I'm picking a winner in this situation over who handled everything right, I think I'm leaning in the direction of the UFC.
Well,
a
I guess
bit.
If you're saying like that, then yeah, I could definitely see that, because at first it's not like it's like a UFC versus Conor thing, but when it comes down to who handled this particular situation, I think the overall best in the public eye, it was probably the UFC. A lot of people probably disagree with that, because they'll probably say you should have eaten as much crow as you could to keep Conor on the card. It's not going to do the same numbers, you know. But for me, it boils down to, I mean, 200 was, yes, supposed to be this epic card, and it's supposed to be a card that means a lot of things. In my eyes, the fight between DC and Daniel unifying that belt means a heck of a lot more than seeing Conor rematch against Diaz. To answer some questions.
All right, so let's talk about Jones Cormier, because, or I guess the proper way would be, let's talk about Cormier Jones, since Cormier is
the
title holder.
I guess they're both champs.
After Saturday night, I gotta admit, I wasn't super jazzed about the fight. No, I mean, DC Jones was the fight we wanted to see, right? I mean, remember when they had the big press conference with 20 people up there? That's the one everybody was talking about. That's where all the questions were going. I think DC Jones was literally the biggest fight the UFC could make at the time. Now, you know, we never saw Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz coming, and, you know, what a financial success that was. But if you looked at all the fights that were coming up, it was DC Jones, man. That's the one you wanted to see. And then Jones goes out and has that kind of ho-hum performance against Ovince St. Preux. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for it. He had explanations for it. We talked about it in the post-fight show. You know, yes, he was rusty. Yes, he did have a late change of opponent. He's saying he probably won't do that again. I mean, a lot of things he won't do. But the bottom line is, I walked out on Saturday night thinking, all right, Jones, DC, you're probably going to headline 200. Okay, I mean, that's good. I mean, we're going to be at T-Mobile. It's going to be 200. It's going to be good. But then the press conferences happened, and I think what we're starting to see, you're already starting to see him fire it back up. And I kind of get that feeling this is going to be one of those slow burns where, yeah, Jones's performance didn't leave us, like, hyped. Like, if Jones had just come in there and smashed OSP, you'd have been like, oh, shit, Bones is back. Yeah. I cannot wait to see Bones in D.C. Like, oh, my God, give me this fight. And instead, you're more like, ah, well, okay, it's going to be a good fight. But, man, they started going at it, and you start to see how much they really hate each other, and you start to see, you know, what's going on between the two of them. And, dude, that crowd in New York, by the way, for that press conference – just the press conference crowd was insane, which makes me so hype about 205 at Madison Square Garden. They were
very
nuts.
Vocal.
Oh,
very,
my God.
Very vocal.
That's the most vocal I've ever heard a crowd at a press conference, other than maybe the Irish who are super drunk when they do, like, some of the press conferences sometimes. But I do think by the time 200 rolls around, it's going to be feeling like a pretty damn big event.
I think so. I mean, I think you put those guys together, and it's going to slow burn, but I think it's going to get fast. It's going to get loud. Thing with John right now is, you know, with all of his recent troubles and whatnot, I think if he came out full guns blazing, you know, I think he would probably rub a lot of people wrong, you know, just for the fact that he's been selling us all on this humble pie.
Right.
You know, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to do it. I'm just so happy to be back here. And then for him to switch back into the old mode, I think would have given the impression to people how much of Jones has really changed.
Right.
But in the same sense, you get these two together, and it's just – it's like Superman and Krypton, man. And Kryptonite, they just do not go well together. I mean – these two literally – the only other pair of people that kind of reminds me is Joanna and Claudia right now. And that's
I'm so excited
about that. You cannot put those two in a room together. And that's how it used to be with Daniel and Jones. But now they've got it more under control because, got to remember, they got slapped on the hands. They both got fined before for their antics. So the fact that now that, you know, they have to kind of keep it together but also build it. But I think John really is, though, happy to be back. I think he's – there was something about, you know, when he walked into the octagon and he walked into the whole arena last time that, yes, it could have looked like that it was just showing, that it was just an act or whatever, but it rang true to me. Mm-hmm. I just believed that what he was very happy to be back. So I think he's taking it all in. I think he's actually probably enjoying this building up rather than just rush back in. I think, if anything, Daniel's probably stewed over Jones nonstop since his left. John's had other things to distract his mind. I think now he's starting to settle back into, hey, it's me and Daniel. It's finally going to happen. And I think it's going to start coming out more and more. And DC's just waiting to explode. I mean, DC's been waiting to let some of this out for a while. But he's the analyst. He's able to keep it inside. You know, I thought it was just kind of awkward that he had to call his fight and try to be sort of biased, but as you can hear, if you go back and listen to it, he's like, oh, that was a good shot by OSP. Oh, I really like how he's doing this. And I'm thinking, like, all right. I'm like, I kind of was rooting for OSP, but you're even giving more credit than what I was giving. I was just like, okay, come on.
I haven't heard the call yet.
Might be a little bit biased.
I'll have to check that out.
Might be a little bit biased. But it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be great, and I think you're right. As soon as it gets closer and closer, people are going to be so amped up for that fight. On top of what already is an amazing card. It's going to be fun. And, you know, honestly, I love watching Conor fight. I love that Conor and Diaz, even though at first I was like, I don't give a fuck about this because it doesn't mean anything. It's just sheer entertainment and money value for the most part. But I think that card is awesome. I'm glad to see Aldo and Edgar get in there, answer some questions there, and then to have Jones and DC right there after it. I mean, those two fights alone.
Beautiful.
Is
beautiful.
Two and a half. That's
I
enough
agree.
For me.
I would be okay. You know, it's funny because I love the fact that they're doing Conor, that they're doing Frankie Edgar and Jose Aldo for the interim title.
Yeah.
And I would kind of be okay, like, if they did, like, let's say they still want to do Conor Nate. Like, if they still want to do Conor Nate, do it at, like, 201 or 202, and then come back at, like, 205 or wherever, and then do, you know, make Conor go back down to 145, as they said he's going to do, go back down to 145. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to try to slip in the rematch or not with Nate. I would be okay if they still try to do it. Because you're right, it was a lot of fun. And I wanted him to go back down and defend his title at 145, but at least they're moving the 145 division forward with that Aldo-Edgar fight, so I feel better about it.
Yeah, and they are. But what's interesting in this, I mean, they rushed through this interim title for Jones, and then they immediately give a match with the champ.
Right.
All right, so it only makes sense then, if this is going to be for the interim title, that must be an immediate match.
Absolutely. If you're going to put him at like 201, like a couple weeks after, like let him fight at 170 one more time and then go back down.
Yeah,
I'm cool with that.
And I guess it all kind of plays out. if one of these guys gets injured, if one of these guys might get a medical suspension, they might be out 6 months.
Yep, exactly.
So who knows? So you they're at least not going to put them on the curb. Because,
you can maybe slide it. It's funny you mentioned Joanna and Claudia. I know a lot of people don't watch The Ultimate Fighter anymore. I get it, man. I totally understand. It's been playing for a long time. But if you are still watching it, and we watch it as part of our job, and, of course, we've been doing the highlight videos with the people from Team Syndicate. We did Corey Hendricks this past week, which is worth checking out. But the tension in there when Joanna and Claudia are just like going at it, and everybody's standing around them, and nobody wants to say shit. Like they're just like,
well, one, they're like their coaches are I don't know if I should get in.
I mean, you got 205-pound dudes that could very easily just be like, stop. You know what I mean? And then you got the girls who, of course, that's their division. So they're like, I'm not. That's the champ of the number one contender. You think I'm going to say anything? Hell no, I'm not saying nothing. But it's funny because, again, you got these massive dudes towering over these 115-pound girls, but they're like, I ain't saying nothing, dude. I'm not getting in the middle of that. Like,
what's interesting
it's so funny.
They come into that, into the gym, and they're just like, total opposite attract, like two magnets just get exactly pulled towards each other. They cannot not get in each other's faces, and it's exciting for me. Like, again, I've watched these series over and over, and then there's some series I won't even watch seasons at a time, and this one I'm
digging it so
totally
far.
I'm digging it. The you know, just the interaction between the two coaches. It's kind of like when, you know, when there was, who was it, Faber and Cruz. It was the coaches, was fun to watch.
Yep.
You know, same with, I guess, Rousey and Tate, whatnot, was fun to watch. Because for the most part, you're not going to probably get a lot of heat from the fighters in this one, because you have women at a much different group, and then you got the guys, rather than have a whole house full of one group of dudes or whatever, and all fighting for one particular thing. What's nice about this is that, you know, the coaches provide so much entertainment alone. Really, you don't even need much of the other
And I love Joanna, dude. Like, Joanna's literally one of my favorite fighters in all of the UFC to watch right now. Like, her fights are insane, dude. I love her style. And it was so perfect, too. And we won't talk about Tough Forever, but it was so perfect. You know, Claudia's – I mean, they've got 115-pound women and 205-pound men. And Claudia's like, listen, y'all can't go together. Like, we got to split y'all up. Like, that doesn't even make no sense. And Joanna's like, don't be bitches. Like, get in there. Like, let's all – everybody go together. I'm like –
I guess that's how I guess that's how she does it. I mean, I think that's how she said that she was able to become the champ that she is, was working out with bigger dudes or whatever. But
Claudia's the sensible one. Claudia's the sensible one,
right?
But,
I mean, because you got to be smart. You know, that's one thing. If anything, I know we've heard more multiple times over the years is that when you go to a gym, you go to these things, your training partners, they have to be working with you, with your best interest at heart as well. You know, they can't just be going in there trying to knock off your head, trying to make sure that they're getting the training that they need to get, without thinking about yourself. Mm-hmm. And you have to be, you know, when you have guys starting to work around in the areas with girls and maybe even possibly working together, one, you have to give them the training that they need, but you have to also be respectful of the differences. Mm-hmm. There's a huge weight difference. Not just talking about, oh, this is a guy and this is one of the ladies going in there. There's huge size differences.
90 pounds of competitive weight, which could be even bigger.
You have to really watch your game. And these guys, for the most part, are high-level athletes, are high-level martial arts. I'm not saying they can't control a punch or can't whatever, but in the heat of things and then accidents happen and you roll over, just that much weight, you know, rolling over the wrong, you know, person's leg gets caught in the mat and somebody happens to roll over on accident, you're done for. Yeah. You know, that's what happened to Juliana Pena, right?
Yeah.
You know, a training partner rolled over against her leg, and she was out for a long time. And that's the stuff that can happen.
Got to be careful with that stuff.
So I thought that Claudia, I thought that was a good move, separating them between the two.
But it just shows that Joanna's a gangster.
Well, she is a gangster, and she is, but she's the fucking champ, you know,
she's
so maybe
champ.
She knows something that we don't, you know.
All right, well, this is the MMA Roadshow, of course. Listen, hopefully you like what you listen to. As we always say, subscribe to us, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening, man. Rate us, review us, do that stuff, man. We appreciate it. That stuff helps out a lot. Of course, you can always download it directly on themmaroadshow.com. And anything else, just tell a friend to listen. If you're like, hey, man, if you want to listen to two dudes that are basically just drinking beer and talking fights, I mean, I don't know if that appeals to you.
Bad impression. I got to work on my impression.
Oh,
game.
Dude, what are you talking about? They're top notch. just tell them to listen, because that's what's up. We always enjoy it. Man, I'll tell you what, there's nothing better than being on the road and somebody's like, bro, love listening to the podcast, man. Like, that's the best feeling in the world, man. It really is, man. To know that anybody would dedicate their time and enjoy, because we just enjoy talking about MMA, man. I feel blessed to be able to do this. I did want to talk about one quick announcement. Patty Houlihan had to retire this week. Had a rare blood disorder. that he's had since birth. Somehow, and I haven't had a chance to check into the story of exactly what happened yet, but a third party alerted the UFC, which is kind of weird. So I'm not sure if somebody kind of – I mean, it's the right thing
since
to do.
He's on the down low.
Yeah, the guy has a medical issue, and he'd been hiding it from everybody for
Commission,
a while, including his coaches, his team, everything. Wow. Yeah, and I understand why. He was like, listen, the blood disorder that I have, it's not communicable, and it's something that is only a risk to me, not to my opponent, so I figured to hell with it, doesn't matter. Fair enough, I can't get mad at him for that, but for him to have to hang it up suddenly was a shame. And the only reason I really thought about it was Paddy Houlihan, to me, had become like the symbol of just like the human fight, man. This guy... I think an overachiever, you know, I mean, this was not a massive man. This was not, you know, a person that, you know, seemed incredibly physically gifted to me. It seemed like more about effort than anything else. And I think about the first time we saw him in the UFC, which, of course, was that first Dublin show back in July of 2014, where Conor McGregor and Diego Brandão were the main event. Paddy Houlihan kicked that night off. He was the first fight of the night. And I could, man, I was sitting cage side for that one. And the roar that happened when he won that fight in the first round, he tapped out Josh Sampo, was just incredible, man. And it set this arena on fire. And then that it just played all the way into Conor McGregor's fight. I mean, it was an incredible night. And then we were in that same building in October of 2015, and not too long ago, and it was the opposite. You know, Houlihan, through freak occurrence, that ended up basically being in the main event. And I was actually there with my wife. I was just watching the fights through a bizarre series of occurrences. I didn't have to work that night. I worked the entire fight week, but I had fight night off, and I was like, "Hell with it! I'm just gonna watch fights." With my wife, my kid was back home with my mom, and so we just watched the fights. And Paddy Houlihan's son was right in front of us, and. Man, you know, I get emotional just thinking about it now. You know, his dad ended up getting submitted in the second round by Lewis Smolka. You know, luckily it wasn't a brutal knockout or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he did have to suffer a loss. And to see just the emotion of a son watching his father competing in the cage and, you know, cheering every move and then seeing him get submitted and seeing the sadness on his face. It's just such a stark reminder, man. And we talked about it at the time, but with his retirement coming back up, I just wanted to kind of revisit it, that it's such a great reminder of what these athletes are doing, man. You know, we sit here and we all love this sport, man, and we all criticize and commend and, you know, say what we like and we don't like and you know, what somebody should have done and what they could have done. And every now and then I think we forget, man, what these human beings are doing, and the fact that, you know, these are not just fighting figures, man. They are human beings with wives and children and moms and dads and brothers and sisters that, I mean, this feels like life and death to them, you know, and I'll never forget seeing that, obviously, as a dad myself, just seeing the emotion on his son's face. I remember, I'm not afraid to admit it, man, I was tearing up, dude, you know, I mean, man, it was just hard to watch. So I don't know, I hate to see Paddy Houlihan go. You know, I don't know how much he would have accomplished in the sport had he stayed in it. You know, I don't know if he was, you know, capable of beating Demetrius Johnson. That's a hell of an order there. But
he certainly wouldn't have gave it. He would have gave it his best.
Hell yeah, he would have gave it his best, man. He would have gave his best. It sounds like he's going to be a coach at SBG Ireland, so I think that's fantastic. And I don't know, just a good reminder of the emotional side of things. Speaking of emotion, Travis Brown did a media lunch earlier this week in Los Angeles. MMA junkie, dude. We're everywhere, bro. L.A., New York, Miami. We got you, son. We're everywhere.
12 countries, dog.
We're all over it. But he was there and did a media lunch. Travis Brown was very emotional during parts of this as he talked about the domestic violence situation, the accusations of the domestic violence. Of course, you remember his ex-wife, it was his wife at the time, accused him of domestic violence, basically went on Instagram, posted pictures. The UFC subsequently suspended him. Then they did an independent investigation, decided there wasn't enough in there for him to continue the investigation. They rescinded that suspension. He, of course, fought in January against Matt Mitrione, and now he's booked again to fight at UFC 200. But Travis hadn't really he didn't really talk about it much in the Mitrione fight in the lead-up. He was basically made it clear, like, I don't want to talk about that. I just want to talk fighting. Cool. So this fight, he opened up a lot more about it, and – powerful, man. And I'll be honest, I kind of wish we had Fernanda here, our resident feminist, to talk about it. And I think we'll ask about it in Brazil. But it was weird because what he said was, I feel like you as a media let us down, or you let me down. Like, you guys wrote about the accusations, you wrote about this, you know, the investigation, which was all factual. I mean, that, you know, it's alleged, you know, all these things. We didn't say he definitely beat his wife. I mean, we all, you know, wrote these things. And he said, and, you know, and then when the suspension was lifted, you know, that's all you did. And it was Mark Raimondi who was actually there who said, well, what do you think we should have done? And he's like, you should have pressed her. You should have pressed her and found out more about what happened, about why she said what she said. And it's weird because, man, to be falsely accused of domestic violence, and I'm not clearing him either, because he's neither been found innocent or guilty. There's never been any charges pressed.
Yeah.
The USC decided there wasn't enough there. But, you know, to falsely accuse somebody of domestic violence, you know, is a potentially horrible thing. But I'll say this too, like, first of all, I think part of it fell down to the fact that Travis didn't want to talk about it in the beginning. So it's like, listen, if you're not going to talk about it, what are we supposed to do? But the other thing was, when he said we should press, you know, his ex-wife, find out, you know, why she said what she said, what actually happened, I got to be honest with you, as a mixed martial arts media member, I'm not sure that I necessarily need to or should be speaking to a mixed martial artist's wife or significant other. And at the so that to me is like, well, wait a minute, I cover you. I'm not sure if I need to cover her or not. You know, you've been cleared of the charges, or at least you've been told, not cleared, I should say, but the USC has found that there's probably not enough there for them to know for sure, so they're going to let you come back. But the other thing, too, is it does seem weird to, like, interview a woman and be like, come on, you were lying, you faked it. You know, domestic violence is such a hot-button issue that it's kind of weird to, like, follow up with a girl and be like, see, they didn't find anything and you didn't press any charges. You're lying. What really happened? You know what?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the police's job. So I can totally, like, seeing Travis Brown literally break down to the point of tears where he had to catch himself and catch his breath to keep talking, I feel bad for the guy. And I understand where he's coming from, but I'm struggling with myself to figure out if I think we really did fail, or if we as a media did all we could and all we should, or if we should have gone further.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's a fine line. I mean, yes, we do cover the sport, you know, but also, I don't know. I think when I think of it, we could, if we wanted to, we could be like these hard-hitting journalists that want to find the worst in everything and go after every criminal or every whatever that's out there. You know, but is that my job to be that guy that digs down and gets the nitty-gritty and finds all those things? Or is it a matter of just providing, I don't know if it's just providing entertainment, it's providing something, but maybe
Well, I mean, we got to at least cover whether or not charges were filed.
Yeah,
we did.
True.
We got to cover whether or not the USC decided he did anything wrong or not. We did. I don't know if we're supposed to then go
even further.
Go even further.
Go,
yeah, like, well,
going.
What actually did happen that night?
I must write it to the very like, end and yeah. forgive
Be
every
like,
other
hey,
thing.
I'm canceling my trip to USC Fight Night 81 in Boston or whatever because
right.
I've got to get to the bottom of this investigation. Like, I don't
right.
know,
because
man.
There's so much sport. And I guess one of the tough parts and what could be a bad thing is that this sport moves so quickly. There's so many events, so much stuff that's why he said about the whole Conor thing. You know, blink your eyes, look over here. There's two more events. We're going to forget all about this thing. The same thing with this. And maybe that's unfortunate that we can get to the point where for us and this, or at least for me in this business, like, all right, he was reinstated. Okay, cool. I don't need to think about that topic
right now.
I
let's
can
move on
to something else right
yeah.
now.
And if charges are eventually filed, we'll revisit it.
Right.
And we'll go back to it.
I mean, I guess, yes, we could probably make a note somewhere and say, well, maybe we should try to follow up and maybe see. But you're right. We cover the athletes. It doesn't mean I go and call every fighter's mom to figure out what's going on elsewhere in their life. I mean, say there's a – I mean, maybe if there was a fighter that's having – money issues or they got scammed. Maybe they want to lean on the media to help them. Maybe we could reach out and do something. But, you know, I don't feel it's my job to run.
You could bring some attention
to
it.
Bring attention, do whatever. But, you know, I mean, there's so much other stuff that I could possibly cover. If I covered every single thing, And plus, I'm just a little videographer. I mean, I'm not gonna solve
hiding behind your camera, you little mouse.
Domestic issues, yeah. You know, and if there is, whatever. I mean, I guess,
just feel bad. I mean, I like Travis Brown as a person, man. I think he's a good dude. I think he's caught a lot of shit for dating Ronda Rousey. You know, I know that's got to be a tough situation, but I like him. Every interaction I've ever had with him, he's been extremely well spoken, extremely professional, extremely open and honest. I mean, I've really, literally, thoroughly enjoyed every conversation I've ever had with them where you're like, you know, some guys, it's like pulling teeth, you know, and you're like, oh, Jesus, that was a terrible interview. Or sometimes you're like, that guy was standing there lying to me. That guy was standing there just giving me cliche after cliche after cliche. I've never felt that way with Travis Brown. Every time I talk to him, I'm like, this dude is a great interview, man. He lays it on the line. And so to see a guy literally in tears saying, I got wronged, man, like the human being inside of me goes out to him. Yeah. But when he says we let him down, I'm not saying we didn't. I'm saying I'm reflecting on myself, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm wondering, like, did we let him down? And I'm not sure we did. I just don't know if we – I feel like we covered the fact that here was the investigation. Here was the accusation. Here was the investigation. Here was this. Now he's back, and then he didn't want to talk about it, and then we move on. Like you said, man, file that topic away, and we're done. And so – I don't know, man. I like to think about this stuff. I don't know if we failed him. I don't want to say, Travis, you're wrong, because I appreciate the fact that he's bringing it up. And I always enjoy thinking about it. When somebody says, think about this, like, let me see. Maybe I was wrong there. But I just don't know if we were.
It's tough because I know there's some people that they expect us to – one, it's weird because I feel like they expect us every time you meet with the fighter, you got to ask the most hard-hitting questions. But when I say hard-hitting – it's not just like Harding, like whatever. It's like they want to find the worst in every person.
Even if it's been asked before.
Even if it's been
asked.
Make
sure you ask him again. It's like, dude, he's already answered that.
And it's just like, bro, I can't keep hashing all this other stuff. At some point, you have to kind of balance it with all the other stuff that's coming in through the week, all the other events, all the other stuff. You can only choose what to focus on quickly. And if you've kind of covered the situation – I mean, I'm not a deep investigative reporter. I'm not going to like, all right, my main issue in life is to cover domestic violence issues. Right. So this particular time happens to be an MMA fighter. Let's maybe then talk to the wife. Let's maybe hash out the whole situation. That's not what I do. I cover MMA sports. I cover the events. I cover the fights. Yes, some life happens in the middle there. Mm-hmm. You know, so at some point I try to cover some of that stuff, but I'll never fully be able to give every topic the respect and the effect that it needs to.
True.
And when you said a lot of times, you know, Travis has been great, maybe sometimes when we do have – it's tough to not have some sort of a personal relationship and like a guy. Maybe something deep down says, I don't need to dig more because I don't want to know. Maybe that's something that
– I just feel bad. Maybe not. My part was that – my part was this. I mean, in a domestic violence situation, like, I feel bad contacting his ex-wife and being like, well, no charges have been filed, so you must have been lying. What really happened? I don't know.
It does nobody any good at that point.
I would love to hear Fernanda's point of view on this, and maybe we'll ask her, because from a woman's point of view, a feminist point of view or whatever, like, I don't know, do you go after a woman and accuse her of false domestic – like, we don't know. I mean – truthfully, nobody knows what happened except the two people were in the house that night. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's a complicated situation. But I say that all that to set up this because I did think this was some pretty powerful stuff by Travis Brown. Not the typical stuff that we get in a media lunch. You and I weren't there. We were actually traveling out here. But we did have a USA Today staff videographer there. You cut a little edit of this.
Yeah,
and we
put a much bigger portion.
Longer thing. We put a little tiny piece of it on MMA Junkie, but you had a little bit longer audio. It's not
just
much
a little
longer.
Bit longer. And then there was a good bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it. But I wanted to play a little bit of this because if you didn't catch this, it is some pretty powerful stuff. It's not the type of stuff you're normally expecting when you sit down for a media lunch. So, it's a difficult topic for sure, but I wanted you guys to be able to hear from Travis Brown.
Grappling mind was that, honestly, and all you guys are with the media, is that nobody questioned her. Everybody put their eyes on me. Everybody made stories about me. And when I was reinstated, that was the only headline. Travis Brown gets reinstated. And I'll be honest, you know, you guys as media kind of let me down.
What do you think we should have done differently?
Ask questions. Why did I get reinstated? What really happened? I'm a 6'7", 250-pound man. I have two little boys at home, and if I did the things I was accused of, you want those two boys being raised by me? Why wouldn't you want them out of my home? Why would you want me to have my career if that's the kind of man that I am? So, yeah. I feel, honestly, a little betrayed. Those are your reasons for lying, but then you don't press charges, you don't try to do things the right way. If any of you guys were here beating your wife, you have two kids.
Did you see on social media?
I swear to God, I will f*** you up. And I would pray to God, I would take your kids and take them from you.
How can we make it so that Travis Brown's name doesn't always have that story coming in the Google search first stuff?
Well, this was the first time I've really talked to any media. You know, I took myself out of it because my way of dealing with this was living my life and being happy. And the people that are around me understand what kind of man that I am. And that's what I did. I'm happier now than I've ever been in my life. And it's not because of the fighting. That's what all this pushed me to learn about myself.
Rhonda's famous quote now about being as down as she's ever been and looking up and seeing you. Somebody would love to tell a story that you both have sort of saved each other in a way. Is that
definitely
fair?
Very much so. And, you know, she was there for me when I was going through my hard time as well. And, it wasn't as public, but it didn't need to be, you know. So I think that's definitely a fair assessment. We're there for each other when we needed it the most. When we felt like everybody was against us, everybody trying to knock us down, we were there for each other. People don't see what goes on behind closed doors. I've been open until last summer, you know, when, again, I felt like kind of like I was done wrong. You know, I wasn't given my shot, but I don't know. I just got to go out there and live my life and be happy. And that's, being happy is the best way to deal with those things. Going out there and you know, somebody that wants to say something like that about you, and the people that want to, you know, comment on a picture of my son and say, oh, I hope, you know, you don't beat your son like you beat this person. It's like, man, let me tell you something, my kids are going to see that. You know, these people don't understand, like, the reasons that were given for saying something like that completely contradicts posting something like that in the first place. You don't want to affect my kids. My kids are going to be affected for the rest of their lives. And again, you know, there's, where was everybody at when I was reinstated?
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Travis Brown. A very emotional day for him. Of course, he's fighting at UFC 200, a big fight there. So, I don't know. Interesting point to talk about, something to think about, certainly in my mind. And, I don't know. If you guys want to weigh in, let us know. Social media, Instagram, follow us at the MMA Roadshow, please. We take pictures, try to show where we're at. You can kind of follow along where we're traveling. Twitter, at MMA Junkie John, at Ken S. Hathaway, whoever that guy is, and at The Cold Coffee, that is T-H-E-E, Cold Coffee. Feel free to hit us up, man. I love the feedback. You know, we got some good feedback about the post-fight shows. A couple people said, hey, man, too much audio from the press conference and stuff like that. And I'm like, Yeah, that's a good point, man. Like, I thought you guys might want to hear that kind of stuff, and now you're saying it's too much.
I know you didn't watch it.
Yeah, I was trying to make – exactly. I was trying to make it so you didn't have to watch the post-fight press conference. What I figured is you could wake up on Sunday morning, you could both hear the press conference or the highlights of the press conference and us at the same time. Maybe we can trim that down a little bit. You know, we don't have to do all of John Jones. Maybe we can do just a couple minutes of John Jones. You know what I mean? So I don't know, but I love hearing feedback like that. Like, man, I love this type of guest. I love that type of guest. I love no guests. I love hearing about your travel stories. I hate hearing about your travel stories. I love
Cold Coffee's impressions.
I love Cold Coffee's impressions. I hate Cold Coffee's impressions. I hate when Cold Coffee says what have you and whatnot.
Whatever.
Nobody says that.
Whatever.
Whatever it is, man. give it. Like, tell me. I'm telling you. Like, listen, at the end of the day, we're just two dudes drinking some frosty beverages, talking some MMA. But we still want it to be fun. We still want it to be entertaining, engaging, and fun to listen to. So if you have something that you want to hear more of or less of, don't be afraid to chime in. I might tell you you're wrong.
We might take it into account.
But at least give it to us.
We might drink a beer and just forget. Yeah.
It could happen.
But no, we do appreciate
it. We love it. We really do, man. We really do.
We do read them all.
All right. Something kind of funny I wanted to share with you. I wrote the story. I just put it out today, actually. Well, I say today. Thursday as we're recording this, so it'll be Friday when it comes out. So I put it out on Thursday. I should say, on the all-new MMAJunkie.com. I think it's a fantastic new look. I love the redesign. It's just, nothing major, but tweaked up a little bit. So hopefully you guys dig it. But put up a story. Meet the man who says he's got a solution to MMA's injury epidemic. Really funny. I met a gentleman named Casey Steinman who actually works for Gannett. Gannett is the parent company of USA Today, therefore the parent company of MMA Junkie as well. And he's actually a distribution manager in New Mexico. But on the side, he's been working with this company called Zumbang Products that developed this polymer. It was originally designed to keep the pressure off of gas pipelines so they didn't break under high pressure in at joints and weak spots. But over the years, they've started to use it in like police applications. Like, I mean, you can use it as like a Kevlar vest or whatever, and they found sporting applications that you could use it as well. And it's this polymer that basically at all times is in a liquid-like state until you hit it. And when you hit it, it turns into a solid for like a microsecond. It takes all the impact, all the energy, and like disperses it amongst itself, and then immediately turns back into that liquid, so that none of the impact or the pressure moves to the other side. It's bizarre science. I mean, I'm just a dude that drinks frosty beverages and talks about MMA, but it's brilliant. And I've actually seen a sample of the work. He sent me a sample of it so I could look at it, and it's crazy. You can actually put these pads on your hands, like, and take a hammer and just bang away at your hand, and you can't feel a thing.
That's crazy.
It's insane. You can't feel a thing. You bang a hammer, and this stuff is like, you know, a quarter of an inch thick or a half an inch thick. And so his thing is that he says that, you know, every NFL team has this. The trainers order it. They custom order the stuff. He wants to see it get involved in the UFC and mixed martial arts, to where you can wear it on like your ribs, you can wear it on your shins, you can wear it on your hands, to make sure that you never break anything in practice. Now, it's still not going to stop those things like we were talking about earlier, where like guys, you know, roll up on knees or things like that. I mean, that's not going to fix that. But this thing is pretty cool. And the cool thing was he actually reached out to me, and after the piece was published, the UFC already same day reached out to him and said, we at least want to hear about this product. We want to talk about it. Come show it to us.
That's cool.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's I don't know what the ultimate end to this thing could be. You know, how do you make everybody wear it? I mean, I know you can make everybody wear their Reebok jerseys, but how do you make it wear somebody in practice? But I don't know. It's this cool product that he happened to show me, and I was like, this is awesome. I want to learn more about it. We put the story out, and the UFC's already checking into it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
It's pretty crazy. So can four still be distributed, though? I mean, or is this thing going to take it away? I mean, like, so say if I'm punching you in the face, and is it only saving my knuckles, but it's still delivering enough force to the opponent's face?
That's right. But if I – yeah, so the face will be tough, but he is working on – they don't have headgear done with it yet, but they're working on headgear. But say, like, you wear, like a compression shirt, you know, like an Under Armour shirt or something like that, you know? But then you sew these little pads in, and they'll do it for – I mean, you don't do it yourself, but you send it to this company. It's based in Texas now, mm-hmm. And they'll sew pads of this little polymer on it. So say like you put it all over your ribs. So, you know, you're basically wearing like an Under Armour shirt, you know, except that right here it's got all these little pads in the ribs. And now you come up and you just kick the shit out of my ribs. I can't feel a thing.
So, but then, so what about the guys that, like, you know, a guy is a striker and he leans a lot on his front leg, and I, as his opponent, want to start working on that front leg, throwing the leg kicks, but he has now a leg guard in his shorts.
It doesn't hurt you, though.
No, that's what I'm saying, but it's not hurting my opponent then either.
Right.
So what's the point of those leg kicks then?
It's not for fights. It's just for practice.
Yeah, I guess so.
For
so
training,
that, but, I
mean, yeah,
that's
yeah.
What he's saying, it's only
for training. Oh, yeah. No, not for fights. Dude,
like,
for training, so
like,
you don't hurt yourself in training.
Lame.
No. For training. Yeah, no. Just for training, so you don't get those injuries in practice. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, it keeps you from, like the
breaking
your foot injury.
I haven't read the article.
I thought that made sense. Like, we don't fight with fucking headgear.
Well, that's
on.
What I'm saying. Like, the guy's trying to, like, come and, like, approach the UFC. I thought he was trying to change the game. He's trying to change the game, dog.
Wow. Is it too late to just delete this segment and start over?
You could.
No. Nah, let's not do that. All right. Quick news I did want to talk about. Diego Brandão. Today he was released by the UFC. Interesting, because we're talking about accusations and allegations and all these things. Diego Brandão, of course, the accusations against him are that he basically pistol-whipped a security guard at a strip club trying to fight his way back into a New Mexico strip club. The UFC originally said they'd let his legal process play out. They decided, we're not going to let the legal process play out. We've done an investigation of our own. We feel pretty confident that he has done these things, and we let him go. I don't know. I happy to get your comment on or whatever. I guess I just want to say I feel bad. I think Diego Brandão is a good dude in his heart, man, in his soul. You know, we talked about being on the bus with him in Japan and finding out, you know, he's got those tattoos on his arms that we've always seen. One is his mom and one is his dad. And I never knew that, you know, the script on his forearms. And I never knew what that was. It's just, you know, he cares so much about his family, and he's just so passionate about it, what he does. Of course, you know, here we are in Florida. You know, he once told Dustin Poirier he'd stab him in the neck. I mean, it's I feel like he's a dude with a good heart, but just the temper is so high, and you got to get that stuff under control. And you know what? They didn't let the full legal process play out here, but with the allegations, I hate to say it, but, like, I'm kind of okay with the UFC just axing him now.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want that. Unfortunately, I know guys make mistakes. You know, look what happened to Jones, you know. Mm-hmm. That I know some people have been saying, you know, well, hey, you know, if he just used coke or maybe possibly just ran and had a car accident with a pregnant woman, that he'd
be
still be
different.
In there, you know. But once you start brandishing firearms or whatever, you know, it's the kind of thing that you just can't really have. And unfortunately for Diego, he's not been, you know, running up the rankings, you know, lately.
Sucks, right? If you're a champ, you get treated a little different.
You get treated a little bit different.
But that's not just MMA, dude. Let's
no,
be honest.
You're right.
Anyway.
It's not anything, but, you know, money does move a lot of things, and we've seen that about this organization. You know, I mean, they're letting their champs run off and do whatever they want to do for the sake of money. So, you know, when it comes to something like this, unfortunately, they probably turn a blind eye to something that they probably should pay more attention to because of the fact if somebody is a champ. But in this situation, if a guy's not really, you know, bringing in the number, he's not bringing the house down, and he's doing things like this, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I've never been to a New Mexico strip joint. I don't know if any of those are really worth actually pistol whipping anybody to get back into them. Maybe that was the case. They said this guy clearly has a lack of judgment.
Can always trust Cold Coffee to break an incident down to its core, to what really matters.
Let's talk about what really matters.
Did you see the strip club he was trying to get into? Oh, my God.
Let's get rid of him. He's clearly lost his sense of judgment.
But, you know, let's say this was John Jones. This was John Jones. Well, no, you know what? This would be like –
he's tough because he's tainted. That's
this
like,
would be the
talking
straw.
About
this
John
would be like
Jones
okay, so it's Daniel Cormier. It's Daniel Cormier. For whatever reason, John Jones pissed him off so much that he's like, I'm going to a strip club. And then he lost his mind and pistol whipped. You know, never done anything wrong. He's a champ. He is bringing in the money right now. Are you saying they shouldn't let him go because –
Well, I'm saying that I bet they would probably give – I don't know how far this investigation of theirs did.
Right.
I mean, they're not even waiting until, you know, the police investigation is done. So I would think that they would at least let that play out first, and they would probably wager a judgment after that happened. For them to do it beforehand and take the preemptive stance, I think
if it was a champ, they probably would have let the full legal duty let it go play out. You're probably right.
I think if anything, they would have said, "Well, you know, we're going to let the police do their investigation, then we'll make a discussion, a judgment after right. that." They've done that before, you know. So
if you're a World Series or you're Bellator, do you pick up Brandao? Because he's got some skills. I'm not saying he's not, you know, top five in the world or anything, but he's got some skills. He's got a name.
Yeah.
He's got a fan friendly style. Win or lose, like, you're going to get a fight. He's not going to go in there and like wall install or whatever.
Yeah, depending on what he has. I mean, this is bad. I could see him going somewhere. Yeah. I could see World Series picking him up. I mean, I mean, he's not bringing people in by droves, but he is a quality fighter.
Yeah.
He's a good fighter, and he fights. He goes in there and he throws down. So if they're looking for somebody that's entertainment and probably can move the needle, then yeah, I think he's worth it. I mean,
maybe do some type of counseling or maybe.
And that's
the
thing. If that's what it was, maybe he was just having some anger issues. Maybe he was just drunk and made a bad decision. I mean, the shit happens. But I like the guy, so yeah, I would like to see him fight again if he can get his shit together, and you know, and if it's all proven that, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know the full details, so I don't want to, you know, say that somebody's lying.
You're
or whatever.
Not sure how good the strip club was.
Yeah, I mean, one, I need to talk with him, but like, yo, bro, was it worth it? Was it worth it? All right, then maybe.
Definitely not worth it. Definitely not worth it. Good Lord, cold coffee. You're going to get this podcast just deleted. iTunes is just going to take it off the server.
There is an explicit rating.
They're going to take it off the server. All right, one last heads up. The UFC, I'm going to announce it since they're not announcing it. Well, it's not a big deal, but I filmed some stuff last week leading up to UFC 200. They are going to do some specials about the top 200 UFC fighters of all time. Yours truly was asked to be a guest, I guess, so to speak, or whatever. I had to come in and just give my take on some people. I think it's just been said. Frank Trigg was actually going before me, so he's going to appear in as well. So I'm just blowing up his spot too. But just something to look out for, some programming, and you can see some MMA junkie friendly stuff there. And then lastly, of course, Titan FC 38. Saturday night, it's actually a fun card. Steve Carl, Bilal Muhammad in the main event for the vacant welterweight title. Jose Shorty Torres, the 1-0 professional who went 25-1 as an amateur and won two world championships as an amateur. The dude is far more seasons than your average 1-0 fighter. He's going to be on the card. Some fun fights up and down. Jack May, Chase Sherman in a heavyweight fight that probably is going to last all of about 60 seconds. Peter Pettis is a guy that I'm excited to see, to be honest with you. Met this guy for the first time this week, and I'm excited to see him in person. So some fun fights. If nothing else, you can get on there and give me shit about how terrible my call is, or maybe enjoy it, and you can tell Titan that it was awesome, and they should bring me back for another time.
Fair enough.
Anything else from you, my man? Enjoying Florida?
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's I know I'm going to have to I'm gonna be pretty tired, get up in the morning, get on the road to go down and see the Black Zillions tomorrow, but I'm looking forward to it. I think, it's a good trip. You know, hopefully we'll get some good things out of it. But no, besides that, no.
Yep. Weigh-ins it is a Friday when this thing gets released. Weigh-ins for Titan FC 38 are on a Emmer effing boat.
Some super yacht.
It's on a yacht. The weigh-ins are on a yacht,
dude.
Super
yacht.
I'm on a boat. Weigh-ins are on a boat, bitch. And then Titan FC 38 here at, what's it called again?
Mikosuki.
All right, well, if you made it this far, you know that Cold Coffee has horrible linguistic skills and his opinions, his opinions are sometimes incredibly politically incorrect.
Which ones?
But that's what's up.
All of them?
Thanks for listening. Did I ever tell you about the time I was working in the restaurant and the phone rings and it was like early in the morning or whatever and the person that answered the phone was like, "Hello? I'd like to speak to the highest person there, please." And I was just like... And they meant they wanted to speak to, like, the boss or whatever. Like, the first thing in my head, like, the guy was like, "I'm pretty high right now, fool. What you need?" But I didn't do that. But I wanted to. I wanted to say it. All right, we're good? Goiânia's Brazil.
Manila.
All right, so Philippines.
Adelaide, so Australia. Zagreb.
Croatia.
Brisbane, that's Australia, so we've already been there. God. London.
England.
Korea. Brazil. Ireland. Japan. Brazil. Glasgow, Scotland.
Scotland.
Mexico.
Mexico.
And Poland.
Mexico.
Because Monterey is the other one. Another one. Monterey and Melbourne.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Who's the
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, because you probably didn't count the United States in your first one. So you were close, man. 13, that's a pretty damn good guess.
I have to find that one thing. It was like, cold coffee's casual conversation.
That was so good, dude. If you had that.
No, what fucking episode was that from? I'd looked in, from what, I probably did it wrong, but if we're talking about different countries we've been to, 11. Because we've been to Malta, there's been Guyana, and then there's been like Rio or whatever. So we're starting to get
11 different countries in
a year? I want to say 11. Here, help me. Watch me count.
Watch me count?
Or not watch me count.
Doing good, Cole Coffee. Doing good.